It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
There are rich teams and there are poor teams. Then there's 50 feet of crap. And then there's us.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoce@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soce. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com. You got through all that pretty fast.
One single breath, dude. The voice you're hearing is somebody we haven't heard from in a couple of weeks because stupid work has been getting in the way.
Stupid work sucks.
Gets in the way of our fun show. That's Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
And joining us is a third party, which makes this the best show with 4 feet.
It's Richard, I'm stumped. Okay.
It's Richard Probst. And, of course, Richard has his own intro, and this is why we're not allowed to go on major network radio.
Here it's it me, dear friend. Alive and kicking. We're alive anyway.
I'll be kicking you with my jingle bells.
That's it. Kick the footless man.
You know, you walk into this stuff.
Yes! Yes! Awesome!
Well, when a fella comes back from the dead, I find that an occasion to stand up, to be counted.
It's not a film sociology
it's not
if I
hard.
Don't do a foot joke.
Well, I can see where it'd be difficult for a man of your stature to keep in touch with even half the people you know. You know beautiful women, they encourage you 1 minute and cut the legs out from under you the next.
I'm not half the man I used to be.
Wow, why is it that the guy in the wheelchair gets a film called The Sitter?
One of my all-time favorite film sociology moments right there.
Yep, and just finding that line of bad taste and hopping on the back of Richard's wheelchair and just rolling right over it. And, of course, Sir Paul, thank you. Good to have you in town last week. We appreciate it. So how are you, Richard?
Isn't it kind of ironic that he ended up marrying an amputee?
And she took him for
everything. Because we're
not
that
everything.
Way.
He's doing okay.
Well, that's
of course,
right.
Half of what Paul McCartney owns is, you know, still quite a bit.
You know.
I guess he's not chowing down on a steak still.
Probably not.
I thought he would do that the day of Linda's funeral. Hi, welcome to Bad Taste Radio. I'm Matthew Soce. And, well, it's been a while because normally... No, it hasn't been a while since we've had bad taste. That's
I like film sociology, but sometimes it gets too bad tasty.
Thank you, Bianca. Ask us on the street next time. We'll explain what that means. Because, you know, Kobe's been gone the last couple of weeks, and he created an archive show. Thank you. And then I had to host and run the board, which is not my favorite thing.
It was an ugly thing, really. Let's be honest.
Wow. Speak for yourself. and now we're here, and then we're going to be... you're going to be gone next week, so I'll
yep.
be hosting. And anyway,
wow.
And Richard's here. You got the Hallelujah Trail. Not the Hallelujah Trail. The Hallelujah Life.
I do.
Your book.
My book.
The Hallelujah Trail is a mid-60s Burt Lancaster Western comedy.
Wow.
It is. Look it up. Anyway, so how's the book?
My book is not based on that, by the
no,
way.
No, it is not.
It
it's
is
something
not.
Else.
I don't care about Burt Lancaster, I have to be honest.
Really?
I don't.
Why?
Because he did not live the Hallelujah Life.
Are you sure?
I
bet he didn't his... I bet he did in his eyes
oh.
and heart and other places.
My book is doing well. Thank you for asking. It is now available down at Indie Reads, by the way.
And by the way, happy, well, it's not, I said it on the film show, or the Blue Show last week, but yes, happy 1 year anniversary to Indie Reads.
Yes, absolutely.
Go check that out.
Wonderful place if you haven't been there.
We should host a chat there.
A chat?
Yeah, film chat.
Film chat.
That would just be, you could read your book there.
I could.
Travis, call us. You know where we are. All right. Well, it's been, I just got back from a mini vacation, so I was able to check out one film. Richard took the heavy load and saw everything that opened this week.
I did.
Even Girl Most Likely?
I did not see that.
Oh, so you almost bat 1,000.
I did.
It was All-Star Break weekend, so it's okay. How many Marlins at the All-Star Break?
One.
Who was it?
Billy. Jose Fernandez.
Very good.
Wow.
Because everybody has to be represented. All right, we're going to start with a film that has a little bit of a local flavor to it, a little animation, the DreamWorks animation.
Like, what are you talking
about? No, we're not talking about RIFPD.
Wow.
It's the other film involving
Ryan.
We
have cemeteries, but really.
We do. It's the other film involving Ryan. There are two films with Ryan Reynolds opening, and Kobe is hopefully not reaching for the aspirin. Yeah. Exactly. But this is the animated feature Turbo, where we have the voice of Ryan Reynolds as a snail who is obsessed with race and not the Trayvon Martin case.
Wow.
He's obsessed with speed, but not in the 50s baseball player sense of the word. Amphetamines. And he wants to be, and he winds up, due to animated movie circumstance, you know what it is, Kobe? Plot things happen, and he becomes
to the snail.
To the snail, in which he winds up becoming the world's fastest snail.
Cool.
And he's going to
take it. It's official because it's on a sign, too.
It is on a sign.
It's a very well done sign.
It's not done on the interwebs. And he goes up against the famed Canadian race car driver, French.
French.
Voiced by Bill Hader.
Guy Gagné.
But not to be confused with the wrestling family of Gagné. That's that's another story. Play the trailer. We'll break this down.
And so begins another wonderful work week at the plant. Growing up, it seemed like everyone around me was moving at a snail's pace.
Let's go, people! Pick it up!
I just wanted to go a little faster.
If you just quit it with the speed stuff, start living your life!
I have a life.
You're a snail, not a car.
It's in me.
It is not in you.
Says who?
Nature. Mother Nature.
I wish I was fast. That was close. What's happening to me?
This must be my lucky day.
A little far from home, aren't you? Garden snail.
I think we got a crier here.
Let's do this.
Ready?
Set. Oh, I got this one.
Yeah.
My name is Turbo.
Oh, I wish I could rename myself.
All right.
There you go.
I feel like I've just seen the whole movie.
Yeah, you kind of have.
You kind of have.
Some of the voices you might remember, Ryan Reynolds, of course, Paul Giamatti, Michael Pena, Luis Guzman. You have Snoop Dogg, Samuel L. Jackson, who is sick and tired of these snails on these... No, because he's the voice of snail. Maya Rudolph, Bill Hader,
Maya Rudolph is in every movie lately.
Good for her. Ken Jeong is in this.
Of course.
I believe Michelle Rodriguez, I believe.
Yeah,
but,
she's in there.
So, and there's nothing really new to this film at all. We have, you have the wet blanket brother, and in this case, brothers. You have Paul Giamatti and you have Luis Guzman.
Which was a nice way to do it, I thought.
You parallel wet
blankets. The snail has
blankets.
The brother, the human has a brother.
Yeah, because the snail winds up on a taco truck and is sponsored by a taco truck.
Dos Bros Taco.
Dos Bros Taco. You know where it is? It's not in Brohio, Kobe. Hmm. It's not. It's
wow.
in California. But so we have... We have the rate, you know, the fact that he wants to be fast and he's out of his world. He's out of his element, Donnie. And then he gets this whole new band of friends voiced by Snoop Lion. Yeah.
Yes. And yes, let's be clear. Snoop
so
Lion.
Why is he Snoop Dogg in the credits? He is Snoop Dogg in the
I
credits.
Don't know. He maybe
that
was,
really bothers me.
You know what? I think the same people, the same folks that still called Dwayne Johnson the Rock. They really need to get their memos straight.
That's kind of sad.
Okay. So,
I bet it is.
Yeah, because there's so many celebrities named Snoop walking around. So anyway, but we have the racing aspect, which we've seen in Cars and you know films, mm-hmm. The Incredibles
was
brought up
specific to the Indy 500.
It is, yes, and there is a major plot point near the end of the film where plot things happen, Kobe, and race things happen.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
It's a very racy film. Actually,
ooh,
thank
no,
you.
That's, and of course, it's at the Indianapolis 500.
Which is actually done very well in animation.
And
I
everybody, I mean, there's a lot of folks around here, especially those involved with that are praising the detail of the track, which I agree with.
I agree with that.
You do see the track. You do see the bits of rubber and tire mm-hmm. that are on the track, which, you know, to be safe to be, Cars did it too. But... not Cars 2. That's a bad film.
That was a bad one.
But yeah, the elements. So if you're a race fan or especially an Indy 500 fan, you will appreciate the look of the track on in an animated scope. So I will give it that. But there's nothing really new story wise. Voice work is fine. Something I didn't know until I read the Onion's review, and they gave it a B minus. But brought in as an artistic consultant is Wally Pfister, who is Christopher Nolan's regular mm-hmm. cinematographer. That helps because the film does look cool.
It looks amazing.
It looks very cool. Worth it in 3D, I guess?
I thought it was.
Okay.
I mean, I thought it was one of the rare films that kind of justify. I mean, I don't think you have to see it in 3D, but I think some of the racing scenes in particular... really, even the early garden scenes, the work scenes...
Right.
I thought were kind of well done. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's... So
I have to say, I
usually hate 3D, and I didn't hate it with this film.
That's a comment. We got that. So we should use that for all the 3D features now. So yeah,
I think Kobe likes it when I say I hate stuff.
Yeah, mostly.
Okay, I'm a hater.
Hater, you know what? You drink your Haterade, and you be a hater. I know I do. So I guess this is kind of, I think, in the same ballpark as for me, Monsters University, where it's not groundbreaking. It's True. Fine.
I like the story more. And to me, DreamWorks is rising a little bit above Pixar.
The Pixar's on a bit of a downside.
They're on a
right
bit
now.
Of a downside. And this story, for me, it worked. I liked the balance in the story. I liked the characters. I mean, yeah, it's targeted at kids, but it's an animated feature. It's supposed to be.
You're right. Unless you're Ralph Bakshi.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's
this
true.
Is kind of what I'm getting out of this.
It's a nice... way to spend 2 hours in a movie theater that you won't wish you got back.
Nope, it's an hour, and in this case, an hour and a half. There is one point, and it's near the end of the film, that I don't want to give it away too much, and it involves the Gagne character. There is a scene where Snail and Race Champion meet,
mm-hmm.
and I think it turns him... The Gagne character comes off as this kind of camera-hungry... egomaniac,
yeah.
Which I know a lot of race car drivers are, but there is a turn that to make him, I guess, the villain.
Yeah.
And that's not needed because...
And it was very abrupt.
It was very abrupt.
He had been so idolized and had really kind of played that out.
Yeah. If you wanted to show of the idea of sportsmanship and competition, you didn't need that. You didn't need a bit of trash talking. You'll see you'll see the scene I'm talking about. It's not really needed at all.
I agree.
And when it gets to the film's climax, and boy, I'm sorry if we're not. I'm not going to give it away, but let me guess. It's a film climax on a racetrack, Okay.
What happens?
Right. So okay. The way they handle the ending, if they just clipped the one scene, I'd have been fine with it. I would have been really a lot more fine with this. A lot more fine?
A lot more
fine. I'd be a lot more fine.
You know what that's like? That's like when people say, yeah, it's pretty decent.
It is pretty. It'd be a lot more decent.
It'd be a lot more decent if it was pretty fine.
Yeah.
I don't like it when people say it's pretty decent. That's like saying, you know, it's really okay.
Like this show. And you know what? It's a real show. Because Elmore Leonard said so.
It's terrific. It's a real show.
Mario Andretti did a vocal cameo, though.
Did he?
He did.
And a couple of the broadcasters, I believe.
Yeah. And there were some other racers. I was reading through the credits. There were some neat cameos in there.
So this will be getting a lot of purchases, Blu-ray time at the end of the year.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. So, okay. So that's all I got to see because I was on a road trip this week, so I missed a bunch of the other stuff.
Were you the fastest, like, radio host on the road?
Aren't I always? I know Girl Most Likely opened with Kristen Wiig, Annette Bening, Matt Dillon, but also opening in theaters. I guess we'll get to the other Ryan Reynolds film, so Kobe will be less queasy when it's all said and done. And this is one that's been talked about quite a bit, and it's from the director of the first Red film. Even though he's not directing Red 2, he's doing RIPD, which teams up Ryan Reynolds and Jeff Bridges, who's borrowing his Rooster Cogburn look and outfit.
Absolutely.
And they're police officers in the other realm, right?
Yeah.
So they're dead men in black?
They're dead men in black. And you will think about that the whole time.
Really?
And you'll think about films like Monkey Bone and Beetlejuice.
Do we have to think about Monkey Bone?
I know. See, that's the thing. And it's better than this film. Let me stress that.
Monkey Bone is better than RIPD.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, this was a painful, painful view. Mary Louise Parker, by the way, is in both films, Red 2 and RIPD.
Now, Mary Louise Parker is not on your list, right, Kobe?
I don't know.
You don't know who that is?
No.
That's...
Really? Okay. Well, we haven't done this in a while, Kobe. It's time for you to Google actresses.
What I'm doing right now.
And she's not old nor vintage. She's of today.
Of today?
She's a host. Like it's a talk show or a game show. Weeds. She's on Weeds.
Oh, okay.
Yes, her.
Yes.
Should we get back to the review that you've got the idea?
She's incredibly
funny. By the way, the covers for the Weeds box set, thank you.
Wow. Now I have to go out and look them up.
Yeah, you should. So anyway. Let me guess. Rookie and veteran, and they got to find dead things.
You know, there's this mysterious object that... you know, we know that the Ryan Reynolds character gets killed. Okay, we know early on in the film, I'm not, you know, doing any, you know, secrets here. It's the partner. We all know that. It's wide open out there.
Oh, played by Kevin Bacon.
Played by Kevin Bacon.
You know, if you're going to be Kevin Bacon, you have to have your character has to do something.
Exactly. His usual smarmy self here. And anyway, you know, what we basically learn is there's this big gold thing that is a big threat to the universe if it gets completely assembled, because it will allow all of the what they are called deados, because somehow that made sense in the script.
Okay.
The undead are called deados.
Yep.
And they will fall down from the sky and take over the earth, and the earth will be destroyed if this thing is assembled. So
Ryan Reynolds and Rooster Cogburn have to stop it.
Exactly. And if that sounds exciting to you,
right,
you need to get a life. You need to get out more. I'm sorry.
Wow, you did not like this.
I did not like this. Partly because I was so disappointed in it. I thought it had potential. You kept seeing where it could go somewhere and really be – it's based on a Dark Horse comic. You know, so there's that graphic –
it's a good thing this isn't comic sociology or graphic novel sociology, but go on.
No, it could have been something. It could have been darkly comical. It had potential. You can kind of see even what Jeff Bridges wants it to be, but about halfway through the film, his energy just drops.
Does he do less in this film than he did Tron Legacy?
At least there was a certain quirk with this film.
Okay.
I thought he just looked uncomfortable in Tron Legacy.
Yeah, well, you know, when you have a big fat check stuffed in your back pocket, I guess. Because we want Jeff to do well. We all
do. We like Jeff.
We like Jeff
here at Film Sociology.
Here, boy, this big, controversial, big, major statements. Here at Film Sociology, we like Jeff Bridges.
We like Jeff Bridges.
We like Beau Bridges while we're at it. So, and Lloyd, we're still alive. We like him, too.
Wow.
So, anyway, but we wanted to do well. So, it's kind of a bummer that he's apparently getting a big check to do this film.
Did he get a big check? I did not look up the
I didn't look
budget.
It up either, but I'm sure. It's a big budget. I'm sure we'll find out how it does Sunday night on Box
Mary
Office
Louise
Mojo.
Parker is good in the film, though. That's the really weird part.
Now, is she just the girl? Because in the trailer, it looks like she's the...
She's kind of like the supervisor of the Boston RIPD.
Boy, I wish my supervisor looked like
exactly.
Mary Louise Parker.
And she's kind of obviously had a fling in the past with Jeff Bridges, so they have this
wouldn't, really,
tension going on. You know, it's... Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, it's, you know... And do not see it in 3D.
Not needed.
Not needed
not
at all.
Not for the flying cars and buildings and things.
I don't recommend 2D, but 3D would be a complete waste of film. Maybe half.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
But it's in theaters. It's not on video yet. All right, there's that. Okay. Also, speaking of action films, so we have two action films going up against each other. Because you have RIPD.
Oh, yeah.
And you have Red 2. Who asked for Red 2? Besides maybe Anthony Hopkins, because he wasn't
Skelton?
The first one. No, he's dead.
Thank
he's
you.
Besides...
Is he a deado?
Oh, jeez. Besides Bruce Willis, John Malkovich, Mary Louise Parker, Helen Mirren, who asked for Red 2? Who asked
Catherine
for Red?
Zeta-Jones.
I figured you would have been up for it, because you really liked Red.
I did like Red. I was out of town. It was that... Because there was a matter of months where you had The Expendables, you had Machete... You had Red, and you had Kick-Ass, all ridiculously over-the-top action films. And, yeah, I enjoyed the first one. I just didn't think we needed a second one. Now, I have not seen it. You have, Mr. Probst.
I have seen it.
We
didn't need it.
Didn't need it.
We didn't need
despite
it.
Despite the presence of Anthony Hopkins and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Catherine Zeta-Jones is probably one of the best things in the film. Uh-huh. Again, Helen Mirren redeems herself fine. I was saying, you know, off the air... I worry about any film where John Malkovich is the highlight.
Which is a shame, because he can be one of our finest
he
actors.
He can be one of our finest actors. But he's over the top here, but he's really good. He's entertaining. But he's matched so often with Bruce Willis, who is just phoning in his performance here.
Again?
I'm convinced he is a deado, and just nobody's...
has the heart or the... I think Kevin Smith tried to tell him, and that didn't fare well in Cop Out.
Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, it's... The film is so centered around him, and he just doesn't invest it with the wit and the energy that he had in the first film.
And that's saying something, really.
Exactly. It's not a horrible film. It's a very average film to me.
How are the action scenes?
There's actually more of the action and less of the kind of the verbal jousting that you had in the first film.
Especially, let's see, 1, 2, 3 Oscar winners? Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, to me, it was such a waste of the cast. I mean, if you like the action more... You know, you may have a reason to see it. I think I ended up giving it on my site a C+, which is a slight recommendation.
If you go to a matinee or you had a few.
Exactly. Go to a matinee if you really want to see it.
Okay. So we've gone through 1, 2, 3 films, and we're going to a film that you told me off the air is probably your pick of the week.
I think so.
And it's from the director of Saw and Insidious.
Yeah.
And it's The Conjuring. Kobe, you're not seeing this one. No, he's not a horror fan.
You're not a horror fan?
No.
Not even old school horror?
No.
No. I have to make bets with Kobe in order for him to watch scary freaky stuff.
Yep.
And this would be
not
great,
just my
like,
wedding video.
Bachelor party video.
No.
Not the bachelor party. I mean.
No, this is a good this is a scary film. This is old school horror. You know, if you saw
Oh jeez.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's nothing like that. Okay, it doesn't have the graphic.
Not the so-called torture porn.
It's not torture porn. It's old school horror, closer to Insidious
and actually stars Patrick Wilson, who was also in Insidious.
Right.
Patrick Wilson, and I never know how to say Vera's...
Vera Farmiga.
Farmiga, thank
who
you.
Who we I like a lot here.
I like a lot.
And for you Office Space fans, Ron Livingston, Lily Taylor.
Who is... I think this may be my second favorite Livingston performance.
Behind Office Space.
Behind Office
that's
Space.
That's a big
Because nothing
leap.
Will ever top
that's
that.
That's a hard top, though. It's a hard act to follow.
He was amazing.
So, I mean, is that from what it looks like, Haunted House Story.
It really is. Yeah. It's a supposedly a case study from the Warrens, who are real-life demonologists from the New England area.
Uh-huh.
They're the same ones who investigated the Amityville Horror.
Oh.
So, which Name gets dropping a vague that. Reference in this uh-huh. film, if you're paying attention to it. And Vera and Patrick play the Warrens. And Ron Livingston and Lily Taylor are this couple with five children who move into this older home. There's obviously some baggage that's never really talked about in the film, but you know, they move into this home and suddenly things start happening.
Plot things, Kobe.
Plot things.
Actually, scary plot things.
Scary, not scary plot things.
Dun dun dun! Scary plot things.
Wow.
So. It works.
I mean, it does work. And what I like is that it's not, even though you kind of know where it's going, it's not predictable in the way he puts the film together. You know, there are places where you think, you know, he's going to put the scare right there, and he doesn't. He saves it for a couple minutes later.
Uh-huh.
I really enjoyed it. I thought Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson were both great. Uh-huh. I also thought there was a lot of heart in this film.
It helps if you have actors of that caliber in this. If you have just, because I think, you know, we grew up, I know I grew up, you know, with the slasher movies of the 70s and 80s where you had, you know, you had inexperienced actors and mm-hmm. they were probably cast mostly to look good and being half dressed and, you know, going down the hallway to find out what the noise is before they get their heads hacked off. Mm-hmm. But I think when you have actors, and I always think of Tony Goldwyn in the remake of Last House on the Left, which I didn't like, but I liked him.
Right.
Virginia Madsen, I know she had done horror films in the past, but The Haunting of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you have these level actors, that adds a little bit of depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not just one-dimensional characters waiting to be killed.
They're not. You know, and there's not a lot of graphic violence in the film. There's no nudity in the film. It really is a film that.
And it got an R rating. I heard a story that I think that the director wanted to keep it an R rating just for sheer scariness.
And that's really why it gets it. It is an intense film, especially emotionally. I mean,
wow.
I was really wrapped up in it. And because the characters are so well developed, you actually care about them.
Okay.
Which kind of makes it scarier.
That's nice. It is nice if you care about characters in a movie.
So if you like old school horror, you're going to love this film. If you're expecting it to be graphic, you're going to be disappointed.
How about that, Kobe? It's not as graphic.
Yeah.
Now that was a good movie.
But it's Richard's top pick this week.
You need okay. to go, Kobe.
He likes something. Listen to him.
Yeah, come on now. All right, the other thing that's happening tonight at 9:30, I'm still with my line back. If you don't have plans tonight, it's okay if you don't.
Nah.
At the Harrison Center for the Arts, and they're showing it again at 4:30 p.m. on the 25th at the Toby at the IMA. But it's a documentary, Medora. And this is about a small town basketball team, a small high school in southern Indiana, who are on a major losing streak. I believe 0-22.
Wow.
And they go through a season. It goes through the 2010-2011 season. It's going to be a part of the Indianapolis International Film Festival, which is running through July 28th. We'll mention that in a little bit. But this is a film that actually got Steve Buscemi and Stanley Tucci for executive producers. And bully for them to be a part of this. So
they like bad basketball.
They apparently do like bad basketball, which means they'll be following Tyler Hansborough as he starts for the Washington Wizards.
Toronto Raptors.
Or, I'm sorry, the Toronto Raptors. That's right.
Come on, man.
Speaking
Same
of bad
difference.
Hey, the Pistons fan knows what he's talking about when it comes to bad basketball. Because that's where the Pistons are right now. Wow. Terrible. But what, and you could say, I'm waiting for somebody to call this the anti-Hoosiers or the other side of Hoosiers, because this is a small town that is, you know, the mills have closed, and so there's hardly anybody there. There's hardly any work there. And they're a small team that is surrounded by consolidated schools. So you have these big schools outside of Columbus and all that area where, you know, they have graduating classes of the hundreds or even thousands in some cases, and they just get pounded. Medora gets pounded by these. You also get to follow, you pretty much follow the entire team. It's small enough of a team. And these are regular kids. Just a heads up, and I don't know what the rating on this, and the fact if this film gets an R rating, it will bug the living daylights out of me, because there's a couple of swear bombs that are dropped, and there's a couple scenes of teenage kids drinking.
No,
I know
that never happens.
It might get banned in Indiana. You'll never see it on Sundays.
Wow.
But but the fact is, these are regular kids. These are regular looking kids. These are not movie kids.
The Medora kids.
These are Medora kids, and they all have a lot of them have a lot of issues off the court, and not just on the court. I mean,
is
so
it more real than American Teen? Do you remember that awful?
I didn't think American Teen was awful. No, okay. it was an MTV documentary.
Well, that's what I mean.
But no, I think it's more realistic than that.
Cool.
I mean,
okay.
And these are not kids. They know they're not going to be. They're going to get signed up to play ball at IU or Purdue. They're just doing something, anything to
maybe Ivy Tech.
Maybe Ivy Tech. That's a possibility. But no, I really enjoyed this. And you as the season goes on, you're really pulling for them. It's got good high school basketball footage. And this is also a film with heart. So definitely worth checking out. Nakobe, you have the IIFF page up?
Yes, I do have the IIFF page.
Well, tell us about it, since you read stuff off screens.
Yes, IIFF, of course, stands for Indianapolis International Film Festival, this being the 10th year for the IIFF, runs July 18th. Last night through the 28th, so you can check that out. Also, I thought you were going to hit this, but you didn't. Tonight, IMA, 9:30, Exorcist.
Ooh. You have seen that.
Nope.
You did not?
No.
Was it Rosemary's Baby that I thought?
Yes.
You did see that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I stand corrected.
Yes.
No? Not going to go check that out with Fair Sweet Bianca?
There is no chance.
It's outdoors.
I don't care.
Wow.
Nope.
I remember showing that to friends in college. And if you remember, it takes about 45 minutes before the really scary stuff starts to kick in. And I had to, I think it was one of my first old man moments at age 20, is to tell these darn kids, you got to wait for the scary stuff. It's not like, you know, because of the slasher movies in the 70s and 80s, somebody's losing their head within the first 10 minutes of the film.
And or you turn it off.
Right, or you turn it off. And I was like, no, give it time. And then the pea soup and the crucifix and the spinning head. I'm like, yeah, see, good things come to those who wait. Well, you know.
And you cannot, I mean, you know it's an effective film because you cannot see Linda Blair without thinking of that film.
Marked
it's
her,
impossible.
That marked her career. Now she's doing, you know, horror conventions every day if she wants. Trivia, who's the demonic voice? Remember who the demonic voice was? I actually know this.
Pauly Shore.
No, that's not who it is. Mercedes McCambridge.
Ooh.
Actress Mercedes McCambridge, who won an Oscar for All the King's Men back in 1949.
Wow.
She, of course, by the early 70s had a bit of a haggard voice and did some drinking, did some smoking, and went in the studio and had to fight to get a credit, because Linda Blair was nominated for Best Supporting Actress, and she felt, and justly so, that she should have half of that nomination.
Wow.
So there was a big kind of legal fight about it, and eventually and then in future prints, she got her name in the credit. So,
good for her.
Good, absolutely. And the other part is, and I know this is going to send a therapist toward my house, when my daughter Emma, the former kids film correspondent, she wants new work, when she was a baby, she wouldn't let nobody clean her face except for me, and it's because I would take the little baby wipes, and when I would wipe her face, I would go, it burns, and it's great to hear your infant baby go, it burns, ooh. So Wow. Now, Emma has not seen The Exorcist yet. I'm going to give her another 10 years.
And then she has seen a therapist.
And then she's gonna see that and go, oh, God, that's Dad. Thanks, Dad. So,
oh, wow.
So as my buddy Laura Jansen reminds me, we have to have a telethon every year for my daughter's future therapy sessions. Kobe.
Yep.
So you got the IIA. You mentioned The Exorcist.
Yes.
Is IU Cinema, are they still on summer break?
IU Cinema is still on summer break. We return August 1st with much ado about nothing. Yes.
We. Oh, because you're an alumni, so yes. You can say we.
We return August 1st with much ado about nothing.
Oh, that'll be good. Mm-hmm. And?
And?
Tonight and tomorrow night.
Tonight.
Tonight at midnight. Are you going?
No.
I'd say it's been a very fun midnight movie season at Landmark Keystone Arts.
Yes, and we are almost done.
That's amazing.
We are almost done. We have two more.
Really?
Next weekend is The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
I love that movie.
I highly recommend. We just introduced that to Emma.
Really?
A couple of weeks ago.
I remember that Facebook
Yeah,
post.
Because okay. Lynn got to see the stage production in Las Vegas.
Wow.
So we got to see that. But yes, tonight and tomorrow night, I often say that Inherit the Wind, the original Inherit the Wind, with Frederick March and Spencer Tracy, that is the equivalent of an acting heavyweight boxing match. The undercard is Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
And wow. That's what we have this weekend.
Shatner Montauban. That's a fight right there. That's some chewing scenery happening, folks.
Wow.
I was 12 when... that came out in the summer of 82. Got to see it in theaters.
You were 12?
I was 12.
Okay.
You thought I was older.
I'm just going to go jump out the window now. Okay.
You're older than me?
I am older than you, apparently.
I have more gray than you, though.
You're a parent.
Yeah, that's true. No, exactly. So, cool. But I remember just what, and it was very cool. Very, very cool. So here's a golden opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, to see, and no, this is not the second Star Trek film from the summer, the disappointing one. This is old school Shatner Montauban. Don't miss it.
Is Tattoo in the film?
Yes! You're darn right. You should go check that out. So you enjoy that. So you liked Wrath of Khan?
I did like Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. We need more Ricardo Montauban wigs. Open vests. Way to go. Or as Emma calls him, Grandpa from Spy Kids.
Wow.
Hey, that's where we learn. Now, to be fair, Emma's now a fan of original cast, original series of Star Trek. So,
really?
That's right. Female Trek fan. She's going to be very valuable.
As long as she's not a fan of Fantasy Island.
No, she's not seen it. No.
Come on.
I don't think that's really high up on her old TV priority list. Yes, she has.
I'm hoping for the remake so I can be Tattoo.
There was one. Oh, jeez. You're not as misogynistic as Harvey Villachez, I hope. And they did one. They did one with Malcolm McDowell. They did a series.
Did they really?
They did.
How you don't did I remember miss it?
Because it didn't last very long.
Wow. I'm going to go look it up.
You will look it up. Or we'll have Kobe look it up because he's done looking at Mary Louise Parker online.
I can do that.
Yeah, I know you can do that. Okay, let's take a short break. We'll talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray. We have Dead People We Like.
Yeah.
We're going to go into the archives. And
so much to come in the next 20 minutes.
So much. And I finally got to witness a Golden Turkey Award nominee. So stick around. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
this is Padma Lakshmi, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI FM Radio.
Are either one of these any good? Sir?
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
Enjoy Canada there, Tyler. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. Hanging out with Kobe Slagle and Richard Propes, the independent critic.
Yeah.
Who's actually recommending films, and Kobe won't listen to him.
Yeah, that's kind of sad.
It is kind of sad. So, yeah. Okay. We have actually kind of a thin list of new titles on DVD and Blu-ray.
True.
The big one, I believe this was the Truly Moving Pictures film 42.
It was.
The story of Jackie Robinson, starring Harrison Ford, not as Jackie Robinson, and directed by the guy who gave us A Knight's Tale and Payback, and he wrote L.A. Confidential, Brian Hegeland.
At least one of those is good.
Yes, one of those is good. So, Richard, your thoughts on 42?
No, I actually enjoyed it a lot more than I expected. I mean, it's a fairly paint-by-numbers, you know, biopic.
Jackie Robinson good, most white folks not Harrison Ford bad.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, it's a little timely when you consider the fact that, you know, Jackie Robinson started out his league play in Sanford, Florida.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, bad timing.
Yeah, and he didn't have a good experience there either, so.
No.
So, anyway.
Ooh, I don't think Warner Brothers had that in mind when they released a film on Blu-ray Tuesday, but yes, that's
fine. Hey.
Well. Oops. Sorry, Florida.
But anyway, it's a well-done flick. Harrison Ford, I thought, did probably the best work he has done in quite a while.
That's good.
It's a reminder that he can actually act.
If he cares about
it. If he cares about it. He really becomes... I think it was Branch Rickey, as I recall.
Yes.
I enjoyed the film. Certainly nothing groundbreaking. You certainly know how it's going to happen. You certainly know how it unfolds. But it comes to life. It comes to life well. And I think it's an important part of our history. And you know, and we're certainly, I think, learning at this time that you know these are issues that keep coming up and we need to keep talking about. So I think the film has a good purpose and it's an entertaining film.
There you go. So now because of 42, this is from The Onion. This is July 19th. With the recent success of sports movies like 42, Hollywood is once again prepared to cash in at the box office. Here are the latest projects to begin production. A broken down athlete who was great when he was young, never got a lucky break, and made some poor choices along the way, gets one last shot at glory, starring Kevin Costner. Sampras. The life of Pete Sampras, overcoming basically no obstacles to have a successful, fulfilling personal life and long dominant career. This one's for you, Jarrett. The away trip. The St. Louis Rams become separated from their owner during a road trip, forcing the eclectic football roster of thugs, brawlers, and goofballs to embark on an epic cross-country journey played by cattle rustlers, a volcano, and the 49ers.
Wow.
The Affray. This 3-hour epic showcases a real-time recreation of the legendary regular season matchup between the Sacramento Kings and the Utah Jazz on December 12, 2003. Remember the Titans, Glory Days. Will Patton returns to star in this prequel based on Titans football team T.C. Williams High School during the harmonious 1970 season before their team was desegregated. The Longest Yard. After a failed second movie, this film franchise returns to its dark roots with Christian Bale playing Paul Crewe and Christopher Nolan taking over as director, which means, of course, music by Hans Zimmer. And finally, because I'm not going to read all these, some of these I cannot. Across the Gridiron, a moving drama depicting the struggles faced by the NFL's first openly gay player, Jay Cutler. Because a lot of people don't like Jay Cutler as a football player. So I could have said Tebow.
He's a football player?
He is.
He's
not on the bench. okay, so you, Richard Probst, recommended a scary movie new in theaters. New on DVD this week is the remake of The Evil Dead.
It is.
Which apparently has the Sam Raimi stamp of approval because he directed the original Evil Dead back in 1982.
It does.
Did you see this one?
I did see this one. It's been a while, but I...
Now, I remember seeing the Red Band trailer for this, and I was wincing. Because I remember wincing at the first Evil Dead film. Does it try to out-Evil Dead the Evil Dead?
Well, I mean, you've got a film that has all the advantages of contemporary technology, all the special effects. You know.
Which is probably the main reason why a lot of these films are remade in the first place.
Exactly. You know, who's to say? I think Sam Raimi's film, I still prefer it.
Right.
I mean, there's just no comparison. But I can see kind of why he gave his seal of approval to it.
How so?
You know, it kind of has a little bit of that personality, a little bit of that.
Because there was a bit, and this is the first one. This is before Army of Darkness, but there was slight moments of just kind of absurd humor wrapped around blood and attacking vines and thorns and things.
Yeah.
I don't want to go any further.
Yeah.
So there's a hint of humor in these, and it sounds like there is in this.
There is a hint in this, and there's certain times in the film where it's obviously tipping the hat.
Okay.
So, you know, at this point, it's home video, so.
Why not?
Why not? You know, give it a rental. If you like it, pick it up.
I think we got another one there, Cobe. That's pretty good. also on DVD and Blu-ray, and this is a film I can't believe I actually recommended, because this is a film that somebody would say, and I've had these arguments with others, but somebody will say this is just a lunk-headed, knuckle-dragging action film, and I went, that's why I'm recommending it. And that's the Walter Hill directed Bullet to the Head with Sylvester Stallone as a hitman who is...
Who's a better lunkhead?
Right. He's screwed over on a job, and he's trying to find the guy that did him wrong, and he comes across an Asian police officer. Guess what? Young Asian cop and old roided up hitman don't like each other, but they have to work together. And
I bet they have different styles of getting the bad guy.
They do have different styles of getting the bad guy, Mr. Slagle. You are correct.
Wow.
And this is a film that, I mean, I remember, I think The Onion referred to The Expendables as the best action film of 1995. This film desperately wants to be 1982. Desperately. It wants to be like 48 Hours, which was also directed by Walter Hill. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, yes, some of the action scenes are slightly stylized, but not a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not Red. It's not Kick-Ass. But
it's not R.I.P.D.
No, it's not R.I.P.D. It just wants to be a 30-year-old knuckle-dragging film, and it is. Yes, there's some not so flattering comments that Sly makes over our his unwanted sidekick's Asian heritage. There's also an axe fight. There's an axe fight, which I believe it's, you hear Sly go, what are we, bleeping Vikings? There's an axe fight. So definitely renting that. You get a six-pack in you, and yeah.
And I can't remember who the Asian actor is in this, but I really liked him.
He was in Ninja Assassin. I know that's the other thing of note. And by the way, there is no such thing as a subtle ninja film, Assassin is far, far from that. But this is, and the fire trucks drive by. And the color girls go doot to doot. Which, by the way, 20 Feet from Stardom is still in theaters right now. Go see it. Great, wonderful documentary about backup singers.
That was a beautiful segue.
It just happened.
Wow.
You know, they opened the documentary with Walk on the Wild Side. So anyway, so Bullet to the Head is also a film, along with Arnold's attempt at a comeback with The Last Stand, that both of them should have been grindhouse features.
My Last Stand.
Oh.
Thank you.
We're going to work on the extended Richard Probst intro now.
It's dumb.
I think mine was more entertaining.
We still let you back in. So, But those are two films. That The Last Stand and Bullet to the Head could have been even better if they were just 70 minutes long and probably put them together. If you'd have done the whole Grindhouse thing. So, yes, Grindhouse is an underappreciated film thanks to Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino.
True.
It's also an underrated process of film that they should be.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of films that would there's a lot of action films that would just be a lot better if they were 70 minutes long.
I agree.
So there are those. Now, old titles on Blu-ray. Criterion has the 1940s version of Lord of the Flies.
Wow.
Survival of the Fittest amongst Children.
That's a great film. That's a great story. I mean,
yep.
Yeah. Cool.
For a mother of children's. also out on Blu-ray, if you need this, Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes.
Why would you need that?
It introduced the world to Christopher Lambert. And you can hear Glenn Close.
Again, why would you need that?
I don't know. And it introduced Glenn Close's voice to partially because Andy McDowell was the girl, but her southern accent was so strong, Glenn Close had to dub all of Andy McDowell's lines.
Wow.
This is directed by Hugh Hudson. This was, I believe, yes, this was his follow-up to Chariots of Fire. It looks cool.
That's called plummeting to
Earth. And, of course, you have Christopher Lambert, who doesn't have to say a whole lot. He's Thankfully. Tarzan. Now, for some reason, Sony has dipped back in, and you can get, if you need, the 1998 version of Godzilla on Blu-ray.
Mm-mm. Okay.
Tumbleweeds. Spider-Man 2. Which I really liked, especially because of Alfred Molina.
But not Spider-Man 1 or 3?
I'm just reading what's on the list, dude.
Okay.
Donnie, you're on. And Men in Black, because we made fun of it earlier with R.I.P.D.
Wow.
And this
Definitely
one goes...
Definitely get Men in Black before you go see R.I.P.D.
Ooh, that's just going to make things worse, aren't you? So you can remember what R.I.P.D. rips off a lot more.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Exactly.
Okay. Mr. Moore, this one's for you. Ralph Bashke's Heavy Traffic is out on Blu-ray.
Wow.
Speaking of Ralph Bashke from 1973.
Good stuff.
The Jackie Chan double feature Battle Creek Brawl and City Hunter is also out. And speaking of Jeff Bridges, Arlington Road with him butting heads with Tim Robbins is also out on Blu-ray. I'm going to go back to The Onion for a little bit. This was a big news item.
Can I mention one release?
Please mention one. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. You were going to mention this because you have a film involving Rick Springfield that's better than Hard to Hold.
It is.
From 1984.
Well, that's not really.
That's bad. That's a backhand compliment.
I think even Springfield would acknowledge that was
okay.
Fairly
so,
weak.
Yeah, Rick Springfield's in a movie. Tell us about
that's
it.
That's coming out this week on home video from Breaking Glass Pictures is An Affair of the Heart, which is a documentary basically about Rick Springfield, but it's a lot more about his relationship with his fans. Obviously, he is not quite the massive success that he was in the 80s.
The 80s were a different time, Kobe.
Totally different time.
Were you alive in the 80s, Kobe?
Barely.
For like 2 years.
I'm going to go jump out that window now. Okay.
You need help?
Need boost?
I can't reach the window! anyway... No, it's very cool. I mean, it talks about kind of his rejuvenation. It's a very honest film because it talks he went through about a 10-year period, kind of almost at the height of his success, when he kind of disappeared from music. And
really?
He was dealing with a lot of depression and a lot of stuff like that, some suicidal stuff, and he just disappeared. He'd spent time with his family. And when he came back... He was just a different person. He appreciated his fans more. He was doing a lot of film work there for a while. He's still doing film work on occasion. His last two or three releases, which, by the way, I've got.
Really?
I am a Rick Springfield fan.
Ah.
I am a Rick Springfield. And I saw him at the State Fair. I think it was two or three years ago.
I know he's been kind of on the Casino Fair.
Cruise.
Sure.
He does all of those.
You're working.
And he's really developed a lot of people who show up on the road to see him, not quite as fanatically as Deadheads, but...
But he recognizes them, he sees them.
Exactly.
Okay.
There's some really touching stories in this film from fans whose music has touched. And it's just, it's a really neat, heartfelt film with a lot of Rick Springfield music. It's not the usual marketing job.
Okay.
So I really liked it.
Well, and I think I've been guilty as others have been of an artist when they reach the Casino, State Fair, Cruise Line level of, well, you know, they're working. Mm-hmm. You got to go where the work is sometimes. Mm-hmm. And if you still got an appreciative audience, that's pretty cool too.
That's, you know, he's still consistently selling. Obviously not on the same scale, but, you know, he did an album a couple years ago, Venus in Overdrive, that was really well done.
All right.
So, anyway.
So you can rent that and then go check out 20 Feet from Stardom, because the fact that those ladies get their story told, I think, that,
exactly.
that means a lot to me. So I'm glad he's got the stories on this. Okay, going to The Onion. In a move that I'm going to see how long it takes before you figure this out. In a move that has shaken the already fragile publishing industry, struggling retail giant Fox & Son Books officially filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Do you know this yet? Okay. Once known as the Big Bad Wolf for its ability to put independent bookstores out of business by wooing the customers with its sharp discounts and designer coffee. Now you got it. It's You've Got Mail.
Yeah.
Big picture, Tom Hanks. All right, I'll move on.
I thought you were going to blame the Hallelujah Life for putting independent bookstores out of.
That's not true. Are you now? What's going on with Are you still on your tour? Are you still talking
about
the book?
I am. I'm actually almost done with my next book.
So, and do we have a date on that?
It's going to be out within the month. We're tweaking a design issue. So.
Okay. Not tweeting a design issue.
No.
No.
Okay. I'm tweaking.
So. Okay. I guess we're gonna. I want to get to Dead People We Like.
Yeah.
Are you there? Is it ready?
I'm
can we
here.
Do it?
Yeah, we can do.
Okay.
We can do this.
Are there more dead people this week?
Well, there's
doing
one in particular.
The annual show of Dead People We Like.
There's a pretty big one this
week.
We
don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
We don't. And this is a classic that guy. Actor Dennis Berkeley. I'm going to show the pictures.
Yes, that
I've guy.
Seen him somewhere.
Yeah, he was how old was he? 67. I'm sorry. Died of a heart attack. First thing, I guess he was in films like Stay Hungry, the Bob Raffleson film, Heroes with Henry Winkler and Sally Field.
I love that film.
The first thing I saw him in was the 1978 film Laser Blast. He is and this was a heavy set bearded guy. Mm-hmm. He plays the cop that harasses the kid on the show. But I remember he was also in Sanford, which was an offspring of Sanford and Son. Uh-huh. Like Damon Wilson wanted too much money and he got his own series, so they brought him in. So he was kind of a heavy set, played Southern guys. I know he was Dozer in Mask.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
Remember the one? He's
that's
the blonde biker, okay. The mute biker.
That's
and
why I recognize
he didn't want
him.
To donate blood. And he has one line to Eric Stoltz, and it's really touching.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
He was also in films like Murphy's Romance, Wanted Dead or Alive, Who's That Girl, Malone. He got kicked in the crotch by Burt Reynolds in Malone. Uh-huh. He was in Tin Cup. He was one of Kevin Costner's friends, Earl, in Tin Cup. No Way Out, The Doors. I remember him in The Doors. Father's Day, Rush, Fletch Lives. But he was also the voice of Principal Moss in King of the Hill.
Wow.
So thank you, Dennis. Yeah. Chubby lug you, so we like that. We're going to go into the archives for a little bit where I find a movie that's on a DVD that you can only purchase online, or as Kobe likes to put it.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
In this case, $20. 1965 Sidney Lumet film that I've never seen before called Bye Bye Braverman.
Wow.
It stars George Segal. This is before Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, if I remember correctly. George Segal, Jack Warden, Godfrey Cambridge is in this, a young Jessica Walter. And it's a friend of theirs who dies, and they're basically attending the funeral. And Sorrel Bork is in this, for you fans of Dukes of Hazzard. And it's more of a character study. The question is, do you want to spend 90 minutes with these guys as they're heading to a funeral of a friend? And the performances help. There's also a lot of really cool footage of 1960s New York, which has changed considerably.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's a small film from Sidney Lumet.
Cool.
Now, anytime there's a film that is nominated in the Golden Turkey Awards, I of course, make a point of it. I got to finally see a film that was up for Worst Monster, the 1962 Invasion of the Star Creatures, which was a science fiction comedy film that was not funny at all, starring two guys named Bob Ball and Frankie Ray, who do bad Jerry Lewis and James Cagney impressions. And they're guys, army guys who are sent to outer space where there's a planet filled with Amazon women and really badly made star creatures. They look like they're in black body stockings with a bad mask on top of the head. So really, really terrible. It was up for the worst vegetable movie of all time. And it didn't win, but it's still worth it. It's on a DVD with Invasion of the Bee Girls from 1973, which is features the main girl was the girl Burt Reynolds left at the beginning of The Longest Yard. All right, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
You can go check out Richard Probst's work and his books at The Independent Critic, independent.com. Kobe's out next week. He'll be on vacation. I will be in. God knows what'll happen. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We go.
Go Tigers.
Good night, Fort Myers. Later.